Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
A fellow who saw him on the trail had come forward, but this fellow actually reached out to us through the Find Paul Miller Facebook site. He said, you know, I'm sorry to take so long getting in touch with you, but I only just now saw the Facebook site. And he said, I just want to offer you my condolences. I'm the guy who saw him on the trail that morning. So, you know, he said, if you have any questions, please ask. He said, you know, I've wondered all this time if there's something I could have said that might have prevented the tragedy. And, you know, I should have asked, did you have enough water? Are you aware of the heat? And we were able to tell him Paul had gone in with plenty of water.
On July 13th, 2018, Paul and Stephanie Miller were finishing up their vacation in Southern California and were preparing to drive to Las Vegas to catch their flight home to Ontario later that day. That morning, Paul told Stephanie that he wanted to get in one last quick hike. Stephanie decided to stay behind and finish packing up their belongings, while Paul headed off to the Joshua Tree National Park for a short hike on the trail known as the 49 Palms Oasis Trail. Although Paul was seen hiking that day, he never made it back to their motel room and has never been seen or heard from again. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 198 of The Vanished, Paul Miller's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. 51-year-old Paul Miller had it all in life. He was known as an avid hiker who was in great shape and loved exploring the outdoors. Paul had risen to the higher ranks at a company that made water filtration systems. That gave him the opportunity to travel and see the world. His kids were in college, and he and his wife Stephanie had just finished extensive renovations on a house they had purchased a few years prior. We spoke to Paul's sister Dawn, and she told us about what was going on in Paul's life prior to his disappearance.
His degree was in environmental science. So he loved getting outdoors. He had worked for a couple of conservation authorities. He'd worked for the Royal Ontario Museum for a while, digging fossils, actually, in Yoho National Park in British Columbia. The job that he had sort of settled into is with a company that makes water filtration systems. He had kind of worked his way up through the company and had gotten to the point where they were starting to send him around the world to different countries that were looking at systems to bring in clean water to different communities, and he was quite excited about that. They actually paid his salary until Christmas time to help Stephanie out a bit. You know, they didn't have to do that, but Paul was highly regarded there at all levels within the company. It was a small company, and so kind of like family, everybody knows everybody.
Paul's wife, Stephanie, also spoke with us for this story. She told us more about Paul and the future that the couple was looking forward to spending together.
Paul's personality, he was full of life. He always wanted to, like, suck every bit of life out of every opportunity that he could. He was always willing to do new things. He always wanted to travel. He hated going back to the same place because he wanted to see something new or do something new. And then as for our kids, my son is just finishing his fifth year at the university and is graduating with a similar degree as his dad. And my daughter is an apprentice for Tool and Die. We were just about to enter empty nest stage of our lives that we were really looking forward to. He was my best friend. We were best friends before we even started dating. Yeah, like we just did everything together. Like we were so looking forward to when both of us would be retired so we would have more time to spend with each other.
We also spoke to one of Paul's closest friends, Ken. He told us more about Paul and Stephanie.
So I met Paul through baseball. We played baseball together many, many years ago. I don't remember exactly when, but I'm going to guess probably about 30 years ago. And so over the last 30 years, we've remained friends, even though we don't play baseball anymore. We continue to do other things together. And so I've known him for a very long time. He was a very strong family man. Him and his wife, Stephanie, were a very solid couple. They loved each other very much, spent a lot of time together. They liked to do a lot of the same types of activities, including the hiking that they were doing out in California and Utah when they were out there last year. Had two kids that he loved and adored and spent lots of time with them and also enjoyed doing a lot of outdoor activities with them, such as camping and kayaking and things like that. So he was just a very solid guy and had a big personality. Was always fun to be around, but yet very caring and compassionate at the same time. Stephanie's very family-oriented again, loved Paul, loved the kids, always was hardworking, very passionate about what she did. Whenever I first met them, she was working in a senior's home doing recreational activities with seniors and loved that and very passionate about that. Along the line, she decided to change her career to teaching, and so she went to teacher school. And now she's a full-time teacher teaching kindergarten and just loves being in that environment, loves being with the kids and just working as a teacher. So she's always been very passionate about what she's done and just very, very loving, caring person as Paul is.
Just into his 50s, according to everyone we spoke to, Paul was in remarkable shape and an avid hiker. When we spoke to his sister, Dawn, she told us what made Paul stand out from the crowd.
Paul was one of those kind of guys that had a ton of friends, many of whom considered him their best friend. He, all his life, was just a very outgoing kind of person, a bit of a jokester, always laughing, loved his sports, not the kind of guy to sit around. Like he's certainly not the kind of guy that sat in front of a TV. They have two kids, and they kind of raised the kids like that as well. TV was, you know, restricted to only certain shows and certain number of hours a week because they wanted the kids to get outdoors. And so they did a lot of hiking and camping together as a family. Actually, the whole family was into sports. So when the kids came along, Paul also did a lot of coaching. You know, just kind of one of those kinds of guys that everybody liked, really well liked at work. The company that he was with took his loss really, really hard. And he's the type of person that made friends easily, kind of person that, you know, would just talk to strangers. He didn't have like a mean bone in his body, you know, loved getting out in nature. The photography was kind of a growing hobby of his. He was in pretty good shape, was quite active in sports. He's on a couple of hockey teams, couple of lacrosse teams, baseball teams. So he had never had any medical issues. And certainly there's nothing that runs in the family, like there are no heart conditions or anything like that. I mean, that's not to say it couldn't happen, but there certainly wasn't a history of it. He had just turned 51. You know, I would say he was in better shape than most people that age, just because he was such an active person.
Dawn also shared the reasons why Paul and Stephanie had chosen this time to make such an extensive trip back in July of 2018.
They had just had their 26th anniversary the month before he disappeared. They had a great marriage. All of their friends have kind of said, you know, if we had that kind of relationship with our spouse, we'd be in heaven. Those questions had to be asked when the sheriff's department was determining, is it a situation where he's lost in the park, or, you know, could it be something else? And they did interview some of Paul's friends and family, and they very quickly ruled out any issues there. They had moved to a new house about 4 years ago and had just finished renovating it, which was part of the reason that they hadn't been on holiday for a while, but that was pretty much done, and yeah, life was looking pretty good. Stephanie had finally gotten a permanent teaching job for the following September and had just found that out. So that's actually one reason they took the holiday down in California. I think they were also in, they saw the Grand Canyon, Bryce Canyon, a few other places, and then Joshua Tree was the last place they were visiting. But it was a place he had always wanted to go. I remember him talking about Joshua Tree years ago. And finally, when Stephanie got the permanent job, he had just gotten a raise at work as well. They just had an anniversary. And finally, the kids were old enough to leave on their own. So it was supposed to be kind of a holiday to celebrate a whole pile of things. It was really their first trip together without the kids. So all of a sudden, you know, they kind of figured, hey, let's go somewhere, just the two of us. And that's where they decided to go.
Paul enjoyed outdoor activities with his wife, Stephanie, and their two children. By the summer of 2018, they had become empty nesters and had decided to take a vacation to several national parks to celebrate their 26th wedding anniversary. At the end of their trip, Paul and Stephanie began preparing to drive from Southern California to Las Vegas in order to catch their flight, which would take them back home to Ontario. That morning, while eating breakfast, Paul was reading over the map of Joshua Tree National Park and wanted to get in one last hike before leaving. Stephanie said that she'd stay behind, and off Paul went, preparing to do the short 3-mile hike to the 49 Palms Oasis, which is at the edge of the park. The trail is marked and well-traveled. Plus, Paul was an experienced hiker, so Stephanie didn't expect him to be gone long. While speaking with Stephanie, she walked us through the events of that fateful morning.
So that morning we woke up. We went to Denny's for breakfast. It took a little bit longer than what we expected. So as we were going back to the hotel, I made the decision not to accompany Paul on the hike just because I'm not a very fast hiker. And Paul is quite fast, so I knew that he would be able to make it there and back to get pictures of the Oasis, whereas I would be pushing it because we had to check out, I thought, at 11, but it was actually 12. I didn't find that out till later. So he decided to go, and this is something that we often do. We both know our limits. So he left just before 9, I'm not exactly sure, but it was before 9.
Paul's sister Dawn told us more about the morning that her brother disappeared.
He only decided, I guess, at breakfast that day that he was going to do the hike. They had been camping, but because they were flying home the next day on the 13th, they grabbed a motel on the evening of the 12th, the Motel 6, actually, which is 5 minutes from the trail, maybe 10 minutes from the trail. So they had gone to breakfast at Denny's, and Paul was looking at a map of the park, and that's when he realized that the 49 Palm Trail was so close to the motel. That's when he said to Steph, you know, we have time. We can go in and do this trail, and, you know, I can get some pictures of the Oasis, maybe see some sheep. And he said it's really close to the motel, and we can be there and back before checkout time. Stephanie wasn't feeling all that well. So he had said, well, okay, you stay back and, you know, finish packing up. You know, I'll head out and I'll be back before checkout time. He was only supposed to be gone for a couple of hours because they did have to drive back to Vegas to catch their flight back home later that day. Paul was under strict orders from Stephanie, his wife, don't be long. He would have gone, the witness said, when he saw him about halfway along the trail, that Paul was hiking fast. And he said, yeah, he was definitely a man on a mission. we sort of said hi briefly, and then he sort of kept going. Said he looked to be in really good shape. So our thinking is he knew he had a time crunch, so he would have hiked in fast to the oasis, taken some pictures. There are certainly some lookout points along the way. And the first time we went, you know, I'm trying to think like Paul, and for sure I was drawn to those lookout points, which are just a little ways off the trail. So Paul would have certainly done that. If he saw like a mountain sheep, he might have tried to get a better picture of it. But the sheep tend to come down some washes that are quite steep. And when we tried to climb up them, it was very, very slow going. We don't think he would have gone up those for very long just because of the time crunch.
When Paul failed to return to the hotel at the agreed upon time, Stephanie began to worry that they would miss their flight. But as the hours passed, her concern turned to Paul. Why hadn't he come back yet? The hike was only a few miles, and as an experienced hiker, it should have taken him no more than a few hours at most.
It was after 10. I just got a really bad feeling that something was wrong. Maybe 10:30 at this point. I'm not exactly sure of the time. I just got a really, really bad feeling. And I thought, well, no, it's kind of still early that for him not to be back. But the feeling wouldn't go away. It just intensified. And so I waited because I figured if I reported my husband missing after only being away from me for less than 2 hours, that they would just laugh at me. So I waited until 11 o'clock and I called the park. And at first they're going, oh no, that trail takes this long to do. And we had read other information. So they're trying to figure out where I got this other information about the length of the trail and stuff. But then I finally said, look, we're supposed to check out of the hotel and I know that there's something wrong. So there was somebody on the trail by 12:30 looking for him.
Dawn walked us through their timeline of events that Paul's family has put together for the day he disappeared. And she also told us about her experiences hiking through the park while searching for her brother.
We figure from the time frame the witness gave us that he probably started the trail about 8:30 in the morning. And the witness said temperature was pretty good at that point in time. It was quite comfortable. It was starting to warm up as he was leaving the trail. We know that there's a grocery store that the back of it faces the wash that comes out of the 49 Palms Oasis. And there's actually a camera on it. Apparently the reason they put that there is that a lot of people get lost on that trail. And if you're on the trail, you can't get lost. But if you do get off the trail, as I said, it's really hard to find it again. And they said quite often people will actually, if they can't find the trail, they'll hike down that wash because from the top of the wash, you can actually see the town. So people tend to go towards the town. So they put a camera on the back of the grocery store just to see people doing that. And there was no sign of Paul on it. But we know as well that there are other businesses along the highway with cameras, and the road that goes into that trail, we thought might have been worth checking video to see what vehicles went in that road. Well, that wasn't done. You know, it might have shown up something. It might have shown, you know, the license number of the vehicle that came in after Paul. But, you know, those are kind of lost opportunities. There are some houses along that road, a few houses. One of the homes, we were told when we were looking for Paul, steer clear of that area because the guy that owns the property is quite territorial. Apparently, he will shoot at people if they come on his property. So that kind of blew us away, but he was apparently interviewed by the sheriff's department. But the search and rescue volunteers were warned to stay away from his land. Now, at the end of the wash, coming out of the oasis, the same wash that heads into town, we were hiking down it. We've done the hike a few times, but in May. And at the bottom, it's still fairly high up. It's probably on the edge of the park boundary. There is a homeless encampment. The park said that they did go in and interview people that were camped there to see if they had seen Paul. They said that they hadn't. Now, the sheriff's department, when we spoke to them, we asked, should we put up posters, like Crime Stoppers posters? They said, well, it's not a bad idea, because they said even if someone found Paul's camera, they might try to sort of sell it on the street. I gather that in that area, they have a lot of drug issues, because we had asked if, you know, they've been checking pawn shops. They had the information for Paul's camera, but they said if it was somebody that was affiliated with the homeless encampment, that they probably would have just sold the camera on the street for drug money and wouldn't have even gone through a pawn shop. But there's, you know, so far been no word of the camera at all.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Stephanie called the Park Service immediately when Paul didn't return. At first, they didn't take her seriously. But when she told them that they had a flight to catch, the Rangers took all of their resources and started the search for Paul. Here's Dawn.
By 11, she was getting quite concerned because he had planned to be back a bit before that. And I believe she called the park office a little bit before noon hour. And at first, they didn't take her all that seriously because he was really only an hour and a half at the most overdue. They said, yeah, that happens a lot. You know, people, the hike takes longer than they think. And she said, but you don't understand. We had to check out at 11 and we had to drive still to Vegas. Once she explained that they were due to fly out that evening, they definitely took her seriously. And I would say around noonish, a couple of Rangers went out and hiked the trail themselves to see if they could see any sign of him, and they didn't. At that point, they knew something was wrong. They started to assemble a search and rescue team pretty much immediately. From my understanding, the search and rescue team was kind of on the ground and ready to go about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But the Rangers were definitely on that trail around noon hour, from what they've told me. Now, my husband and I, we were on a canoe trip in the Arctic, so we weren't even reachable. And my sister was in Mexico at the time. she really couldn't get a hold of any of us. So at that point, she called one of Paul's best friends, John McQuinn, and he immediately flew down and caught a flight that evening, actually, and stayed with her the whole time that the 5 days that the active search was ongoing. She also called her cousin Leslie, who she's quite close to. They kind of grew up together. Leslie as well flew down pretty much immediately. So during that time, she stayed at the motel. They checked in and were basically with her the whole time. None of them, the three of them, were allowed out on the trail. John tried, but search and rescue staff and the park staff were pretty adamant that they only wanted people out there that were part of the search and rescue team, that they didn't want to have to worry about anybody who wasn't used to the trail or the climate. John was a bit frustrated by that.
One thing we know about Paul's disappearance is that he didn't have his phone on him, which could have been a useful tool to help locate him. Dawn told us that this was not out of the ordinary for her brother.
Paul, he is stubborn. He never liked the idea of being tied to a cell phone. I'm a bit like that, so I totally understand it. And when he's on holiday, he tends not to carry the phone on him. That morning when he left, because it was a last-minute decision to go out there, he was rushing and rushed out forgetting the cell phone. He actually forgot his wallet as well. Had he had the cell phone, you know, we could have maybe pinged him and gotten a bit of a fix on his location. But unfortunately, that day he didn't have it on him, which was not surprising for Paul.
We were also able to speak to the National Park Service for this story, and specifically the leadership at Joshua Tree. Here's David Smith.
So my name is David Smith, and I am the park superintendent at Joshua Tree National Park. And my job basically is to manage this park service unit. Well, every day is unique. Joshua Tree has had an incredible surge in visitation over the last 5 years. We've gone from about, a million three a year to about 3 million a year in the course of like 5 years. And as a result, we're just trying to deal with so many additional people coming into the park that want to enjoy it. So I supervise a variety of chiefs who have individual disciplines. For example, the chief ranger is in charge of all law enforcement inside the park. So all federal laws are administered inside the park. And if things happen, we have to deal with them. He also administers our search and rescue program and our fee revenue program. So that's the fees that people pay to camp or come into the park.
Superintendent Smith shared what the National Park Service at Joshua Tree did in their initial search for Paul.
She called around noon because they were planning on leaving and said, hey, you know, Paul has not returned. So Ranger arrived at the scene immediately, and I'm pretty sure, I think it was Dylan Moe was the reporting party. Yeah, so Dylan Moe, one of our Rangers, was out there, and Katie Ash, another one of our Rangers. They immediately identified Paul's car in the parking lot and looked at other cars that were in the parking lot as well, hiked the trail out to the oasis there and back and did what we call a hasty search. So that's, you know, where you quickly go down a trail, you look for any obvious signs. You're not going to be doing, you know, a grid search where you're going to be going out into the more remote areas, but you're looking at logical places where someone might be, calling his name along the way, interviewing anyone on the trail that may have seen him as well. And they got back to their vehicles, no sign of him still, had not reported to the hotel, had not reported to his wife, Stephanie. And so I think at 2 o'clock, they activated JOSAR, so Joshua Tree Search and Rescue. And rescuers started arriving immediately. And a new search cycle began, an operational period began at 4 p.m., so it was cooling down just a little bit, and we got searchers out on the trail again. And this is kind of the next step where we start looking at, you know, most likely places other than the trail. So, you know, washes that may lead off the trail. Stephanie had said that Paul was interested in taking pictures of bighorn sheep. So that would mean maybe going up higher above the oasis as well onto some of the rocky areas that were there. Going into some of the side canyons, you know, taking the canyon drainage back down to 29 Palms to the supermarket to see if, you know, there's any sign of him there. And I believe the initial search period went on to about 10 o'clock that night. We activated canine units as well that first day. So, dog units went out, and we had access to Paul's clothing so that they, you know, they could get the scent from the clothing. And the county then, if I'm correct, it was either the first day or the second day, they joined in as part of a joint command for the search incident. So we're in San Bernardino County. They have access to their helicopters as well and began using helicopters to search the area. So this went on, I believe, for 5 days, five intensive days of searching inside the park. We started getting casualties of our searchers during the daytime because of the heat. So they had to be removed from the search area and treated for heat-related illnesses. And I think at the end of day five, the intensive phase of the search was suspended because at that point, the probability of survival had diminished considerably because of the heat and the conditions and all the areas had been looked at. And we just could not maintain that level of search activity, you know, past that time period. So at that point, we went into this limited search kind of an operation. We would identify areas that had higher probability of success and continue to send staff out and continue to send JOSAR out primarily on the weekends when we're mostly a volunteer operation.
When Paul disappeared, his wife Stephanie called those closest to she and Paul. His friend Ken told us about the call he received.
So I was actually at home and back in July of last year and got a call from another friend of ours, another mutual friend of ours named John McQuinn. And Stephanie had reached out to John just on the day that Paul went missing that night. Stephanie had reached out to John to let him know that Paul was missing. And John was the one who contacted me shortly after he had heard from Stephanie. John and also Stephanie's cousin, the two of them flew down to California to be with Stephanie for the 5 days that the search continued. And so they were out every day searching, not Stephanie or John or Stephanie's cousin, but the search teams were out every day searching. And John was kind of our go-between to connect between the team down there and all of the friends and family back here to let us know on a daily basis what was going on and how things were progressing. And so Stephanie obviously was not really in any sort of condition to be communicating regularly with people back here. So John was really the go-between between him and Stephanie's cousin. They supported Stephanie while she was down there during that search time. My understanding is that it was very difficult, and which is to be expected given what was going on. So my understanding is she was not sleeping very well, crying a lot, thinking about Paul, thinking about the kids who were back here at home because the kids are a little bit older now, so the kids were not with them on that trip. And so they were back here, so she was thinking about them as well. But it was a very difficult time, for sure, and continues to be. But certainly those 5 days that the search was going on was incredibly difficult for Steph and everybody. It was, in some ways, disbelief, and I'm sure lots of people who go through this type of thing probably say the same thing. It was almost like it was a dream, like it wasn't real. And at some point you're gonna wake up and everything's gonna be fine. So in lots of ways it was disbelief because knowing Paul and knowing what he was like in terms of his love of the outdoors and all the things that he would do with kayaking and hiking and backcountry camping, that something like that could happen to him, it was kind of disbelief. And so you go through that for a period of time where you just don't really believe that it's happening.
We asked Ken what he thinks happened to Paul.
I think originally I was fully expecting, whenever I first found out that he went missing, I was fully expecting that within a day or two they would find him. He would maybe have fallen and injured himself somehow and just couldn't walk out of the park on his own. And so they would find him under a tree or behind a rock, something like that. And after a couple of days, whenever they hadn't found him, that's whenever it starts to become more, I guess you think of it more seriously and more wondering, okay, will he ever come out of there alive? Will they find him and bring him out alive, or what's going to happen? So I think after about probably 2 days is when I really started to wonder what's going to happen. And then you get to that point where you're waiting by the phone and by your email for the updates to come to say what's going on now and have they found him yet? And just anticipating every phone call and every email that that's going to be the message that says they found him. And as time drags on, it becomes harder and harder. I mean, obviously, everybody still hopes that they find him and there's some sort of closure. But I think as time goes on, recognizing what the conditions are like down there, what the conditions are like in the park, and knowing as the days and months tick by, it's harder to find anything. And so now it's hoping that they find something, but I'm not as positive that they'll find something in the short term. So it's not that same anticipation every time the phone rings or every time there's an email. There's not that same anticipation, but certainly hope that at some point the message does come that they found something. Whenever he first went missing, I had thought, like I said, that he fell someplace and injured himself, whether he broke a leg or hit his head or something like that, and was just somewhere seeking some shade and some comfort where he could be out of the elements until they found him. And then as time went on, I started to think, okay, maybe that same thing did happen, but they just didn't get to him in time. But then after this year being down there and seeing the park myself, I was down there back in May with Paul's sister and brother-in-law, and we were doing some searching in the park. And after seeing the conditions in the park, I thought it's less likely that he was just somewhere that they couldn't find him. I mean, I still think that's a possibility that maybe he fell off of a rock pile. There's several places where you can climb up on rocks and get a good view of the oasis or a view of the town or a view of rock formations. So I thought, I still think maybe he climbed up on one of those and fell off and just is in an area that's very difficult to search and very difficult to get to. And so they just haven't found him yet. So that's still a possibility. There are lots of people who think that Paul was not necessarily abducted, but that there was something, some sort of criminal activity that happened, that whether he was taken, you know, kidnapped or abducted by people in the parking lot or somewhere along the trail. There's lots of people who feel like that type of thing may have happened. And I guess I'm leaning a little bit more towards that now after having been in the park and see it. I'm not convinced that that's what happened, but I also recognize that there's not as many places for him to be in the park and not be found as what I originally thought. I think if he was in the park, there are still a number of places where he could be that they would not be able to find him, but I don't feel like that's as likely as what it was a year ago before I'd been to the park. You can't imagine what could have happened, what could have gone wrong. And so having some sort of answers to be able to say, here's what happened, and have some idea of what happened. Because I've gone through scenarios in my head repeatedly and trying to figure out, what do I think may have happened? And it's really hard to come up with a scenario that would fit where you could go, yes, I think that's what happened. And so I think for the family and for all of the friends to be able to find something and have some explanation as to what did happen, I think that'll be very, very important, and hopefully that we can get to that point.
When we spoke with the Park Service, Superintendent Smith told us about how his agency conducts searches for people and what they did in the search for Paul.
When you do a search, you know, you go through all the likely scenarios of what possibly could have happened. It could be, you know, from most likely, which is, you know, he fell and, you know, is in a crevice somewhere, to, you know, the least likely, which is, you know, someone could have done him harm. Yeah, and some searches, you know, the subject can actually, of their own volition, choose to leave. So it could be a stage thing. Those tend to be on the lower end. And with Paul, there was no evidence at all that any of these things would have happened. There is no evidence that there was any problems with Paul, that he would have chosen that. There was no evidence of someone using his credit card or having any financial gain from Paul's disappearance. So, you know, that's always a possibility, and it was investigated by our special investigative branch of the Park Service. At that point in the search, we brought in additional resources from outside of Joshua Tree. We don't have special agents here that deal with that, but some of the bigger parks do. And so we brought in rangers that specialize in that to do the higher level of criminal investigation to look at those possibilities. I've been out there, I don't know, a dozen times since Paul went missing, looking. I know the men and women and the dogs that have been out there looking for them. They have scoured a grid up to the oasis at 49 Palms, past 49 Palms, beginning to enter the wonderland of rocks. I mean, we've gone throughout this entire area, and there's not been any tangible evidence nothing at all. We have one witness who identified Paul as hiking into 49 Palms on the trail, and he saw him that morning at a time that kind of suited when he might have been there. But that's the only evidence we have. his family and friends, you know, they've been down here, you know, 3, 4, 5 times. I've gone hiking with them. They are very well equipped. You know, they speak of Paul as being in great shape. You know, he is, you know, an avid hiker. You know, he uses common sense. He was hiking, you know, relatively early in the morning. You know, he wasn't hiking at noon on a well-established trail. You know, I think he did have water with him. So he was trying to mitigate the danger. It sounded like he was relatively well prepared.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished.
We know that Paul made it to the trailhead of the 49 Palms Oasis Trail because his rental car was found parked there. But there has been no trace of him found inside the park. Dawn shared some of her thoughts on what could have happened to Paul inside of the park.
We did think about a medical issue, but, you know, we kind of ruled it out unless it was something that was related to the heat. I do know that when people become overheated, that sometimes they can, you know, start to act in an irrational way. And that's possible, but there is shade at the Oasis. So my thinking is that after he passed the witness, it was actually downhill at that point to the Oasis. And he certainly would have been able to cool down there. There's quite a temperature change when you're under the trees there, like easily a 10 degree difference. He probably would have rested. He had some protein bars with him and water. So I just can't see him running into that type of problem. And coming back, if he had, you would think that he would have collapsed on the trail if it was something related to the climb back out again. So we tend to think it's unlikely. When we were there in May, we also had a friend of Paul's with us, which was good because we could kind of bounce ideas off him, and he agreed with us that because Paul had a time limit, he wouldn't have gone too far off the trail. You know, he certainly loved photography, and if he saw a point where he could have gotten a really good shot of something, we can see him doing that. And we also know if you get off the trail, it's hard to find it again because it just blends in with all, you know, the dirt and the rocks. If you get up high and look down, you can see the trail. But if you end up too far off the trail, or especially going down a bit, it's really hard to find it again. So, you know, it's possible that he did wander a short distance and then went to get back to the trail and went the wrong way. You know, that's certainly a possibility. And we do know that if somebody did try and attack him, we've talked about that with his friends as well, and we know that Paul would certainly put up a fight if he was at all able to. He wasn't tall, but on his hockey team and lacrosse team, he certainly, despite his size, was one of the tougher players and not apt to take getting pushed around lightly at all. Hard to say. The sheriff and the rangers told us they did look for things like blood and scuffle marks and couldn't see anything. But when I was out on the trail and tried to scuffle things up just to see what you would see, it was almost impossible to tell that I had even attempted it, because the ground's just so hard and rocky that you can't really see footprints.
With so many possibilities, one thing that stuck out to Dawn when she and her family went to Joshua Tree was that other park patrons lacked appropriate attire, supplies, and shoes, and how these people were able to safely hike that way.
When we were there, we saw people going in wearing flip-flops and not taking much water, and how on earth they hiked it that way, I don't know, but the trail is well marked. And, you know, it's a lot up and down, but if you stay right on the trail, it's still fairly rough, but I guess you could do it. We were quite shocked at, you know, the number of people going in that didn't seem prepared. You know, they maybe had one tiny bottle of water. When we were out searching for Paul in May, it got hot in the afternoon, and like it was, you know, something we had to be really careful of. So I found myself overheating a couple of times. So when we did see people go in, we kind of, you know, wondered, you know, how far are they going to get? And some would turn back. You know, most seem to get in and out without too much difficulty. So, you know, it just makes the mystery of Paul disappearing even greater, as he was certainly an experienced hiker that had the proper footwear and lots of water.
At a loss for what could have happened to Paul that day, his family turned to possible witnesses that may have been in the park at the same time as Paul.
A fellow who saw him on the trail had come forward when it hit the news, so a day or so after Paul disappeared. He was actually visiting from England. He saw it on the news and came forward. But the park had not told us much about him. Didn't really tell us anything because, as they put it, it was an ongoing investigation. This fellow actually reached out to us through the Find Paul Miller Facebook site. He said, you know, I'm sorry to take so long getting in touch with you, but I only just now saw the Facebook site. And he said, I just want to offer you my condolences. I'm the guy who saw him on the trail that morning. So, you know, he said, if you have any questions, please ask. He said, you know, I've wondered all this time if there's something I could have said that might have prevented the tragedy. And, you know, I should have asked, did you have enough water? Are you aware of the heat? We were able to tell him Paul had gone in with plenty of water. I think he had like 3 liters. He also knew about the heat because he'd been camping in the area for that week. He knew that it got hot, and so that's why he wanted to get in the morning. The witness was pretty sure he saw him on the trail. It was about halfway along, about 9 o'clock in the morning. The witness was coming out. We had asked the park, you know, were there any other vehicles in the parking lot that the witness mentioned? And they said there was one vehicle, but they didn't want to tell us what kind because it was an investigation. The witness did tell us that there were 4 people who got out of the van, 2 men, 2 women, and they headed towards the trail. And he said, you know, they looked to be sort of 20-ish, appeared to be friends. They were sort of laughing and stuff like that, and they headed in. But unfortunately, they haven't come forward, which is unfortunate because they would have gone in after Paul, and it would be really useful to know if they saw him. And if they didn't, that means he's disappeared somewhere closer to the oasis near the end of the trail, as opposed to, you know, on his way back. But because there's no camera at that parking lot, they have no pictures of the vehicle or a license number or anything like that. Yeah, it would have been good information to have if somehow they had come forward. It was in July, and that trail's not particularly well-traveled in the summer because of the heat. That's actually one reason they had to call off the search for Paul last July after, I think by the fifth day, the temperature was just too dangerous for the search and rescue people. So we figure, you know, the more word we get out there, the better. And we're not even sure if they were local people or if they came from, you know, elsewhere. The witness, you know, you're not even thinking that you might need to know that information. So he just kind of registered that, yeah, they were there, and then he got into his car and left. But yeah, they might have seen something. Who knows? But we were able to confirm exactly where the witness saw Paul on the trail, and it was the spot that we thought it was. The trail goes up and down. There's a fair bit of elevation, and he had just come up a steep section and said he was resting sort of beside a rock that offered the only shade on the trail. And when we've been down there, there is only one rock at that time of day will give you some shade. That was indeed the spot where he saw Paul.
Paul's family has been determined to leave no stone unturned in the search for him. Dawn shared just a few of the things that they've done during their searches.
The dogs that they took in, we've talked to the dog handler many times, and she was pretty sure that they tracked him as far as the oasis and then seemed to lose him at that point. But we found out a little bit more in May that in the temperatures that they were facing, it gets harder for dogs to detect scent, I guess, when it's hot. The one dog in particular that they were using, it was so hot out there last July that the dog, Montana is her name, ended up burning the pads of her feet. She was actually taken out of commission for several months to recover. They didn't find in that heat that they could use the dogs for very long. Normally, to get to the oasis, it's probably, I would say, 45 minutes one way if you're hiking fairly quickly. In the heat that followed the day after Paul disappeared, they weren't able to use the dogs the whole length of the trail just because of the heat. And they have technology where they can fly over looking for heat signatures, but they said the rocks were hotter than a human body would be, so they couldn't even use that. Yeah, it just seemed like everything was working against Paul. We also found out there's another man that's in there that's been missing for 10 years, and there's still no sign of him. They did find his car, but no sign of him. But the park's pretty much given up on him. They, you know, after 10 years, there wouldn't be much left. In Paul's case, you know, when I asked what condition might a body be in, and they said, well, if he's in a crevice where it's dry and flash floods aren't going to come through, he could still very well be intact. I guess bodies in that heat sort of dry out, almost mummify. But they said if he was somewhere out in the open, the scavengers would have certainly been at him, but his camera should still be there, and the backpack, and probably leather boots would last for a long time, and they've seen no sign of it, of anything like that. And there sure are a lot of people still looking. I guess we're putting a lot of hope on the drones. If they don't see anything, then I guess we'll be back to looking under every rock again and just spreading out our search area. We have been asking for about a year to get permission to bring some trained search and rescue drone pilots in. Because when we looked at maps of everybody's GPS tracks who have been out there searching for Paul, including our own, there were a couple of big holes. And in May, we took a look at those areas, and they're areas that have very steep drop-offs. The area has a lot of sort of canyons in it and ridges. We looked from above and below on a lot of those ridges, thinking that Paul might have gone to the edge to get a good shot, good picture. But there were a few we simply couldn't get to the bottom. They're just too steep and too dangerous to get to. You know, we thought, well, if he fell over in that spot, the only way we might possibly see anything is with a drone pilot. Once Eric came on board, it seemed to move quicker. Like I say, we've been trying for about a year, and then he just kind of let us know just this past week that, yeah, they're more than happy to go through the application process for this. They call this special user's permit, and he didn't think there would be any problem getting it approved. Although, you know, as I said, that things take time. But we do have some drone pilots kind of waiting for the word to go in. And it looks like they were originally thinking September, but now they're thinking October just because of the heat. We hope to check out those particular areas, although they said, they can cover a lot of ground in a short period of time. So we'll see what happens with that.
When Paul went missing, his wife Stephanie stayed at the park for the next week to help with the searches for Paul. But since that time, she's had difficulty talking about or returning to Joshua Tree National Park. And she told us what park rangers shared with her before she left to return home the week after her husband had disappeared.
I came home on the Wednesday, so not quite a week. But they had basically told us that it was getting dangerous to continue the search. And I had basically asked the question. I said, so that means that you're no longer searching for my husband, but that you're searching for his body. So they basically said yes. And then the conversation was over because I didn't want to look at them anymore. Because they basically said, you know, like, there's nothing more we can do. I'm not 100% convinced that he is in the park. I think if he was in the park, looking at the timeline, he would have been found by now.
Dawn told us that due to the lack of clues in this case, Paul's wife Stephanie can't help but wonder if foul play could be involved.
I think from what she's told us, she still thinks it's foul play. I guess knowing Paul and knowing how experienced he was in hiking and how he knew there was a time limit, she finds it hard to imagine that anything under his control would have stopped him from coming back. And some of Paul's friends have also suggested it as well. She thinks that he's not in the park. Dave and I, having been to the park and seen it firsthand, we know that there are so many places that you could fall and never be seen. So we tend to think he's still in there. But, you know, a lot of people have been looking and we still haven't found anything. And so Stephanie's kind of veering towards the foul play scenario. It's very much wondering about the other group that went in after Paul.
One thing that Paul's family has been grateful for is the amount of support they've gotten from those who have continued to search for Paul when they can't be there to search on their own because they live more than 2,000 miles away.
We found out when we were down there that there are a number of people that have been going in on that trail, you know, as their time permits, kind of looking for Paul, and we were able to connect with some of them. There was one fellow who came out, hiked a whole day with us. He drove in from L.A. just for the day, and, you know, that was a bit of a drive for him. But, you know, a few other people have heard the story, and so they send us emails every so often saying, yeah, I was out there today. Here's where we went. Sometimes they'll send some pictures, and the one fellow showed us a picture of him in sort of under some rocks that had almost formed like a cave. We got thinking, well, if Paul had injured himself and couldn't move, he might have tried to crawl somewhere where he could get shade, like, you know, a cave like that. And there's a lot of spots like that along that trail. We did, you know, see a lot of people out who saw Paul's poster. They would ask a lot of questions. You know, we were sometimes wearing helmets and search and rescue vests and that kind of thing. You know, everyone kind of said, well, we'll certainly keep our eye open. But from the amount of searching right along the trail, we don't think he's really close to the trail. They would have found him by now.
The National Park Service has been helpful in looking for Paul, but they don't have unlimited resources. One of the things Dawn did share about the Park Service is that while most trailheads have cameras to monitor who goes in and out, the trailhead at 49 Palms Oasis does not have one, but the Park Service has committed to putting one in. She also told us about some human remains that were found near the park recently.
It sounds like the body, they identified it as male, and it was found just outside the town of Joshua Tree, sort of on a lake bottom. So it wasn't in the park, it was just sort of outside the town. Haven't heard back yet from the chief ranger. They did, for obvious reasons, suspect that there had been some foul play. The ranger didn't think it would be Paul, but you never know. But the trail that Paul was on, it wasn't too far from the main entrance to Joshua Tree National Park. It's a funny little kind of extension of the park. And it's there because of the oasis. But it's also the only trail that you can get to without having to go through the park gates. So any other trails, you'd have to have a permit, like a park pass, I mean, to go in. This one, you don't. Anybody can go in just because it's outside. It's kind of between the east and west gates of the park, but kind of sticks up north. So it's almost a little separate area, although it does connect to the park. We found out that most of the trails in the park, where there are a lot of people traveling, they have cameras at the trailhead. At the trail that Paul was on, they don't. Now, they have told me that they realize that that is an omission and that they should actually have a camera there because, in fact, it's the trail where they have to rescue the most number of people. You know, we raised it with them in the fall when we were down there, and they said, yeah, we are looking into putting a camera in. But then when we went back in May, it still hadn't happened. I gather things move slowly in park administration.
It's very clear that there are many people who are heartbroken over Paul's disappearance. It has been particularly hard for his wife and children. We briefly spoke to his son Dryden and daughter Tiana. Dryden told us about his dad and that he's still hopeful for a positive outcome.
He just brought joy to the room. Everybody had a good time. Anytime anybody asked him for help, he would help them out. I'm still hoping that he just slipped in his head or something and has amnesia or something like that, wandered off somewhere. I know lots of park services are pretty good at finding people. Numerous people go missing in that park alone each year. And with the temperature they had been having, there had been some rain just before it happened. So it was still a possibility. And I'm still hopeful. But when they started winding down the search a bit, that was when I started questioning it a bit more. There hasn't been any sign of him anywhere in the park. So until they prove to me otherwise, I'm still hoping something like that happened.
Tiana told us what she misses about her father.
He was amazing. I miss him every day. He was the kind of guy who would do anything with you, whether it's fixing a car or going for a run. He's just an overall really nice, friendly guy. He and I always worked on cars together and played hockey, shooting on the hockey net. It's just all the little things that you do daily, you kind of notice like, oh, if he was here, he would have loved it, that kind of thing. Camping especially. Was great. He and I, we had planned a trip to go on Route 66 together, and especially with the parking so close to Route 66, I don't want to be anywhere near it.
So what happened to Paul Miller on July 13th, 2018, when he went to go on that one last hike? Did he suffer from a medical emergency? Did he go off the trail and accidentally fall into an area that has kept his location concealed? Did someone in the park harm him? Is there a possibility that he used his last hike as an opportunity to disappear? These are just some of the questions that we have been left with. By all accounts, it sounds like he just left for a quick hike and had the experience and supplies he needed to do that safely. What has been so baffling is that not a single trace of him has been found despite extensive searches of the trail and surrounding area. At the time of his disappearance, Paul Miller was 51 years old. He was 5'5" tall and weighed approximately 160 pounds. He has gray hair and brown eyes. He also has a large tattoo on the left side of his chest. You can follow Paul's story on social media at Find Paul Miller.
If anyone has heard anything about Paul, has any ideas about Paul, any evidence about Paul, by all means, you know, contact the National Park Service here at Joshua Tree. And our number here is 760-367-5500 and ask for the Chief Ranger's office. And we'd love to hear about it. I know Paul's family would like some closure as well. We still have posters up inside the park and at the trailhead.
I hope, and everybody here hopes, that there's just some sort of closure, that something happens that brings some closure I mean, every day is certainly hard for the family. It doesn't really get a lot easier for them and all of the friends as well. We're all in the same situation, just hoping that something comes along that provides some closure and trying to all support each other as best we can and support the family as best we can. So we hope for some sort of closure. And I know in particular Paul's sister, Dawn Robinson, she's very, very much wanting some closure, and she's been down to the park with her husband, Dave, twice now, searching the park and working with the search and rescue volunteers who will come out and help them when they're there. They're planning to continue going back until something is found. And so it's very difficult for the family back here. And so we need to somehow just get some closure. And whether that means the park needs to bring in some other resources or whatever needs to happen, I don't know, somehow we need to continue to spur the action to continue the search and continue looking for him, because without that closure, I think it's just going to continue to be very, very difficult for the family. It's hard to fathom knowing Paul and knowing what type of an outdoors person he was. It's just hard to fathom what could have happened. It's hard to believe that something like this did happen, because he was very, very knowledgeable, very good. He loved the outdoors and was always in the outdoors and very experienced at, you know, hiking, backpacking, backcountry camping.
Having to go to work was actually a good thing, because she said it's the only time of the day where she's busy enough with the kids. She's a kindergarten teacher, that she doesn't think about Paul. His birthday was in May, and she said that was a really tough day. And she arranged just for a bunch of his friends to get together at his local pub and drink a toast to him. Her anniversary, which was in June, was a really tough day. She said she cried from the moment she woke up till the time in the wee hours the next night that she fell asleep. She doesn't let on to other people. When July 13th came up, which was the anniversary of the day he disappeared, Stephanie kind of had an open house just for people to drop in and touch base. She did a few interviews with local media, but I think she found it very draining. So by the end of the day, she was pretty much done. I've asked about, you know, have you considered maybe having like a celebration of life? She said she's not ready.
That brings us to the end of episode 198. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and a private discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from British Columbia. Thanks for listening. Hey Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.